Commencement exercises are taking place on college campuses throughout the month in the Kansas City area. Nationally, some 1.8 million graduates will receive a diploma. It's a prideful time and celebrations abound. But behind the toast and backslapping lies a grim reality. Some of these graduates aren't going to find gainful employment. A great many will move back home with mom and dad. Ouch. All the way around. I'm Bill Anderson. This is Central Standard. The Cash Money Crew is here to help ease the financial stress that can surface when a child moves home post-college. They're called boomerang kids. Later this hour, financial tips on caring for aging parents. Joining us this morning is David Jackson. David's with Waddell & Reed Financial Advisors. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Great to be with you.
Dan Matthews is here. Dan is with Stepan Rothwell. Hi, sir.
Hello. Good morning.
And Lucas Butchel is with us. Lucas is representing KHC Wealth Management Services. Nice to have you with us.
Good morning. Great to be here.
Well, you know, I called this from a Wall Street Journal article. Over 22 million adults between the ages of 18 and 34 were living at home with their parents in 2012. In the article by Kirsten Grind, there's this. Even parents who can afford to have their kids return home without significant strain should be worried about the consequences. The line between support and coddling is blurry and dangerous, is the implication. Lucas, respond to that.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that statement and assertion. When kids come home, you know, it's important to, you know, make sure you set expectations and really help them understand what the purpose of the arrangement is and ultimately figure out how the arrangement ends.
Yeah.
Because that's the line. If it's an open-ended situation where you're providing all the support, it can end badly and create a situation where they become dependent on you and don't become an adult that's operating on their own.
So, Dan, like a good quality front-loaded mutual fund, you need to take care of business up front, right?
Yeah, that's right.
And set the tone.
Set the tone, exactly. Set those expectations. And you were talking about it possibly being a dangerous situation, as that article mentioned. And I think it's more so about the financial risks that potentially the parents may be taking on by bringing their boomerang kids back into the household, particularly what are they going to sacrifice as a result of this arrangement? Are they going to delay their retirement? And also, are their financial goals now going to change as a result of this? And are they going to be able to keep their savings intact? They probably hopefully have built up an emergency fund. Is that going to now jeopardize that? Mm-hmm. And what's the liability of adding somebody else to the household, especially a young 20-year-old? Those are all the risks that have to be considered before entering these type of engagements.
Well, let me ask you, can you put a dollar figure on what it's going to cost to have a child move back into the house post-college, say on an annual basis? I have to believe it's going to be in the range of several thousand dollars.
Well, I guess it depends on how many bags of Doritos they're going to eat.
But,
The cost associated with someone here in the household is variable, obviously, depending on the household. So really sitting down and kind of breaking it down, you know, how are they going to contribute to the household in terms of groceries or what are they going to do in other ways around the household? Maybe they pick up something like mowing the yard, whereas before the parents were having to hire somebody to do that. So, you know, there's obviously a savings there that they can generate within the household. But in terms of a dollar figure, it's going to be across the board, and I'd hate to just throw out a blanket number because it's probably going to be different for every household.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
But it can be incredibly costly. And you alluded to the fact that it could change everything. It could change our retirement plan. It might change the emergency fund that we've built up. David, I'd like you to respond to that.
Well, you know, you think about your child moving back in, you've already got your life going the way you're expecting it to go. Now you got somebody else who's using utilities, who's eating groceries. And, you know, so it depends on a lot of the kids are underemployed. Some kids, they get out and they're unemployed for an extended period of time. Mm-hmm. So it's going to vary with each particular family. But, you know, you have to go into it with an understanding. Okay, I'm here to help, but I'm not here to take care of you like when you were a 6-year-old or a 12-year-old now. You know,
right.
you're kind of an adult. So, you know, we've both got skin in the game.
Yeah. And you have experience with this, right?
Yeah. I have a son who had to come home for a while. He got laid off from his position, and we invited him back because, yeah, he didn't have the income. And, you know, we did have to set some expectations as far as, and it was actually more his mother than me, as far as, okay, what time do you come in at night? He's a grown man. You know, do we really put restrictions on him and things like that? But, you know, we couldn't really expect him to help pay the bills because he had no income.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we did expect him to help around the house.
But it is still our house. And if my child returns and I have an objection to him having an overnight guest, I'm going to make sure that that's understood.
Yeah, and that's something that should be discussed up front. Because, yeah, if you're 25 or 30 years old, it's like, yeah, I'm used to having my guests. I'm used to doing my own thing. And then all of a sudden, you know, somebody's telling you, you can't do this, you can't do that. You know, it's better to have that conversation up front, eliminate some of the conflicts.
Yeah, Lucas, it's not always about money.
Oh, absolutely not. I would propose that many of the pitfalls that you find with these relationships are not about money. I think David hit on it, and I think that's the critical thing for success is setting expectations up front. You know, we work with a number of clients that are dealing with this situation, and we actually recommend that they sit down with the child and negotiate the terms of the agreement and actually put it in writing. It doesn't have to be anything fancy, but really just a statement of understanding. Everybody signs on to it.
Really?
Absolutely. And then if there's a disagreement, which there inevitably will be, you know, you can come back to that and say, hey, you know, for example, had a client who had a student come back or a graduate come back and you know, they were used to staying out till however late they wanted to stay out.
Right.
And, you know, came back, I think at one point at 5 a.m. and, you know, disrupted the household, and the parents were wondering if something was wrong. And, you know, the parents were expecting some sort of acknowledgement from the child that, hey, if I'm going to be out past 2 a.m., I'm going to let you know. And so setting those expectations up front, and they came to an agreement. Unfortunately, it came after a fight. If you can have that conversation in advance and kind of go through some of those things, it helps that situation go a lot better.
Yeah, I had a personal example of that when I was in college myself, and it's going back a few years. I'd come home for the summer and was staying at home, and me and a buddy of mine on a Saturday night decided to take a road trip. And we got back Sunday afternoon, about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I walked in the house. And my mom and dad had said, hey, we've been looking all over for you. We didn't call all the hospitals. We didn't call the police. You know, we were concerned. And I'm like, I do this all the time. What's the big deal? But I had to respect the fact that, you know, now that I'm in their house, they're concerned. But then I also wanted them to understand, well, hey, I'm a grown man and I've been doing, you know, my own thing for a while. So don't expect me to change totally. So it's, you know, both sides have to acknowledge and make adjustments.
Did you have any bumpy roads when your son came back into the house after graduation?
Yeah, the biggest one that I remember is he would stay out late at night and walk in about 3-4 o'clock in the morning after a night of partying.
Yeah.
He wouldn't make a lot of noise, but our bedroom was right by the front door. So when he'd come in, it would wake up my wife. And that, you know, after a while, that just really got her upset.
Sure.
And, you know, so she had some really serious conversations with him about that issue.
Yeah, Dan.
Yeah. Well, I'm not in this particular situation, but I do have some relatives that are in this situation, and you know, their son, who's back home from graduating from the University of Missouri, Columbia, he basically just disappears over the weekend. So, you know, he'll leave Friday and come back Sunday night, and that seems to work out for them. You know, fortunately for him, he has friends down in, you know, Westport or downtown that he can stay with during the weekends, but he just basically gets lost.
I bet you might have experience with this. Call 235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Did you set expectations when your college graduate moved back in? What was your experience like? We want to talk to you. 235-2888. So what's driving this? You know, we're talking about millions of kids graduating, young adults graduating from college, and then having to move back in with mom and dad. Is it just a simple matter of economics?
Absolutely. It's you know, it's a 7.5% unemployment rate, but for kids, it's a lot higher. It's at least double that.
Okay.
So, yeah, you know, just because you've got that degree doesn't mean you're going to find a job. And even if you found a job, you may not find a job that's going to allow you to afford to have your own place.
Yes.
So, yeah, in a lot of cases, people, you know, it's all they can afford is to move back home.
Yeah, there was an article in the Kansas City Star yesterday, and there's a subset of these of the millennial generation that they're calling Generation R after Generation Recession that they started college in 2007 during the great at the beginning of the Great Recession. And for those that are now coming out into the workforce, almost half of them are, you know, underemployed or unemployed. And they're also carrying, you know, on average about $25,000 in school loan debt.
Yeah, and so, probably some credit card debt.
Yeah,
on also, top of it, right?
Yeah. Probably, yeah, yeah. Probably some on top of that too. So, you know, being, you know, they're already in the hole,
right.
And so they need kind of a, you know, not a, so much a, as a handout, I would suggest, but more of a, you know, it's kind of a hand up at this time in their life.
Yeah, yeah. Is there also some sort of a shift in modern American society, or are we just talking about pure economics?
I think, did you want to address that?
Yeah, I think the economics is, I think, the biggest driver of it. But the second piece I think that is an interesting one is with this generation of children that are kind of coming out into the workforce. I think they've had, by and large, an expectation set and a lifestyle set when they were growing up with oftentimes parents that have had been financially astute and made it. They have a certain lifestyle expectation that with an entry-level job, or if they can't even get a full-time job with what their degree is for, if they're just taking what they can get,
mm-hmm.
They can't maintain that lifestyle that they've been accustomed to.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you want to maintain that, you know, another way to help afford that is, you know, deferring some of those costs by living at home and sharing those costs with other family members, which I think is effective in some regards. It also can be dangerous in that, you know, the child eventually is going to have to be out on their own. And if their lifestyle expectations need to be reset based on what they can actually earn in the career that they've chosen, you know, that's something that the parents need to be aware of and help work with the children on, unless they want to be permanently on the rolls of the parents.
Yeah, sometimes that's really a smart decision, though, to move back home for a while to start getting your finances in order, you know, give you a chance to pay down some debt, build up some savings before you move out and get that first apartment,
right.
And those kind of things. So sometimes it is wise.
Yeah. This is Central Standard. I'm Bill Anderson. The Cash Money Crew is here, and we're talking about the some 22 million young adults who have graduated from college but find themselves living at home with their parents, underemployed or unemployed, in some cases saddled with student loan, maybe even some credit card debt. And David has some experience he'd like to share with us. Hi, David.
Hi. Yeah, I'm really kind of confused. I don't understand what the issue is. I'm the parent of a young adult, and, you know, she's due to have a baby coming in December. And, I mean, yes, I'm proud that I got her to adulthood and she survived all of childhood, and that's wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, I took a deep breath and said, finally, I'm free. But the point is, she still is living between my house and her fiancé's parents' house. They move back and forth, go a couple of weeks at a time. And I don't understand what the big deal is. This is what family is about. For thousands of years, grandparents lived within walking distance. I mean, maybe not in the same building, but they were still there close enough you could yell their name and they would hear you. That's what family is about.
Lucas,
it needs help, then I'm here to help her. Of course, it's not like I'm raising her all over again. She's an adult. She comes and goes as she pleases. She already knows the rules of the house. It's not like I'm moving a stranger into my home.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's not a big deal. Of course, if she can make enough money to help with the bills, she's going to do that. If not, then I'm going to help her as much as I can. That's why I'm still alive.
Lucas, I can identify with David on one level. As I was prepping for this show, I had one of those "so what" moments. You know, that's what we're here for. We're family.
Absolutely, and I think that's a great perspective. And you know, I think a lot of people feel that way. I think the piece where it changes, though, and that it can cause a problem is if it never has an end date. or if it encroaches on the parents' plans and expectations. As Dan mentioned earlier, you know, if it's going to continue and you're going to provide a level of support that impacts your situation down the road, your retirement, your ability to do what you want to do, if you're comfortable with that choice, you know, that's great. If you're not comfortable with it, but yet you haven't had the conversations with your children, I think that's where you can get into some conflict issues and ultimately, you know, have some relationship problems with your children mm-hmm. as a result.
Yeah, I can remember a client that I visited a while back who was retired, receiving a retirement pension, and had three adult children in her house. None of them were working. None of them seemed to care about going to work. Mm-hmm. And they were just draining her. Yeah. And so, you know, it's like, once she goes through her retirement taking care of them, they're not going to have anything to take care of her. So, right. I mean, there do need to be some parameters on it. So, yeah, you want to take care of your kids, but, you know.
Yeah. Dan?
Yeah, and I would say to David, you know, I'm not here on the radio show suggesting that this is a bad arrangement and that you shouldn't get into it. But what we are saying is that it's just not as simple as, oh, sure, come home. You got a place here. You know, no problem. Period. Okay. What we're saying is, and David said on the call, help her as much as I can. Well, how much can you really afford to help her, David? I mean, that's kind of the question. You know, people often don't understand how much they're really sacrificing. And as financial planners, it's our job to kind of alert people to the fact that, hey, you're sacrificing maybe your future lifestyle here. Are you really willing to do that? Do you really understand what you're doing, what you're giving up by making these decisions now? So that's what we're here today to have that type of discussion and, you know, just really help people kind of make these arrangements enjoyable and get some satisfaction out of them, because they really can be great. Having your children come back, it can be a great experience for those, and they can –
For a while, anyway.
For a while. Exactly.
Well, you know, I have a colleague here at KCUR, and she was telling me yesterday that her dad placed a call to her after she graduated from college and said, okay, here's how much I'm paying on your car insurance. Your cell phone is good for the next 3 months. At that point in time, you'll either need to pony up or find your own arrangement with another cell phone company. And I'm like astonished at that. And she's saying, Bill, it was the best thing that ever happened to me.
Yeah. I think he had the key. It's like set expectations and get it out up front. You know, that's not a limitless pool that we're dealing with here.
So. Yeah. And I will tell you this. I've been accused of being a helicoptering parent by one of my children. And I've been accused of being an enabler by any number of people. And there is a kind of a fine line, because there is definitely a downside to helping too much, you know, and Lucas, you're shaking your head. Yes.
Yes, there is. And I think you're hitting on it. It's about a balance, and it's about what's going to work well for your family. But I think the piece that the enabling element is if you get to the point where you're providing resources, you know, providing cash so they can meet their living expenses or you know, giving them walking around money. I think you just have to worry about the long-term implications, because there's going to be a time when you're not going to be there, and there's going to be a time when your resources may or may not be there.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're so used to having that where they don't have the incentive or haven't had to go out and work and figure out how to make it on their own, I think that's where it can be a negative for your children down the road. And as parents, that's kind of something that is counterintuitive, because you want to help, you want to support, you want to make them comfortable, but just realizing that you can overdo it.
That's Lucas Butchell. He's with KHC Wealth Management Services. Dan Matthews is here with us. He's from Stepp and Rothwell. And David Jackson, one of our regulars from Waddell & Reed Financial Advisors. Let's go to the phone lines, and Vanessa joins us. Vanessa joins us from Independence. Hi, Vanessa.
Hi. I am a 27-year-old, more recent graduate, and I'm living with my parents now. And I really, really love the situation that we are in. It's a chance for me to spend more time with my family and also to not worry about the stresses of not having a full-time job. I do work part-time, so I'm able to help sometimes with food. I'm not paying any rent. My parents are blessed enough so that I don't have to help them with that. But I also don't feel that I have, like, the society pressures to get out there and be independent and struggle through part-time job in school while I'm really trying to figure out where I want to be in a career. And so I think it's just really supportive, and my parents and I have more of a roommate situation where we have good communication. We don't need a contract to, you know, tell me the rules and what I can and can't do because we're all adults in this situation.
Well, Vanessa, you're 27, right?
Yes.
And you were in the Peace Corps.
Yes.
And I just want to know, you know, when you moved back, was it smooth sailing right away, or did you have some adjusting to do moving back into the home with your parents?
Well, I didn't. I don't think I needed some major adjusting at all. I was at that point, I was excited to spend time with them because I hadn't seen them for such a long time. Mm-hmm. I was excited that Peace Corps experience that I had made me realize how important they really were to me, and that the need for me to go off and separate myself from them really wasn't there, because what I realized was that what I wanted more of was the people that I loved around me.
Oh, wow.
And so making that, coming back home, you know, I didn't want to create problems where, oh, you know, well, you know, I can do whatever I want because I'm an adult. You know, I mean, we work together as a family because we love each other. And so that has made this situation very enjoyable.
Do you see yourself staying at home for an extended period of time?
Well, it kind of depends on what happens in the near future. I'm going back to school for nursing. And so depending on where I go, I will probably stay home for a while until I can have a more stable job so that I can pay my bills without struggling. I just don't see the necessity to get out there and struggle through bills when I have the support able,
yeah,
you know, for me as an individual. I know not everybody can say that, and I know how blessed I am to be able to do that. So I might for the next few years, yeah.
Gentlemen, a question for Vanessa?
Well, no,
or
I think,
a comment?
I think her situation is a good one in that her parents see that she's still trying to move forward. You know, she's mm-hmm. working, plus mm-hmm. she's going to school. So, you know, I think the typical parents are going to be really supportive in that situation versus a child that doesn't have a job and, you know, not really looking that hard for a job and just wants to be at home and get the free rent.
Right, yeah.
Right.
And do you have chores?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's, I don't have a to-do list or anything, but I, you know, we all see what needs to be done and we do them.
Yeah. So. I just need a child to do the cat litter. That's all I ask for.
You don't ask for much.
Vanessa, it sounds like you've got a great situation, and I think to David's point, everybody's on the same page and you're working in the right direction. I think that's exactly what you want in this type of an arrangement.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
Thank you. Have
a great day.
Thanks. You too.
Let's talk to Ray. Ray is joining us from Leawood. You're on the air, Ray.
Hello.
Hi.
I was just calling in to say I've had a couple of experiences, both with sons. One who was in law school for a couple of years and married, and so that they could save money to buy a house, they lived with us. We had sort of a basement apartment arrangement, and so there was a planned start, planned finish. And it worked real well. Mm-hmm. We got to know our daughter-in-law better, and they moved out to Olathe and bought a house, and it, you know, couldn't have been a better experience. And then we had another son that came back from graduate school, lived with us while looking for an apartment or place to stay for a few months, moved into a house with another guy that was in his industry, and after a few months, they were burgled twice in a couple of months. And so he came back home for a few months, found another opportunity, and is out of the house again. So in each case, I think the key was there was a planned start, planned finish. We didn't charge them anything because we wanted them to save money to either buy or invest or whatever, and that's what happened in both cases.
Wow, that's an interesting approach. You're getting some smiles from the guys, the guys that do this for a living.
Ray, I think that one of the keys that you said there was a planned finish. I think that's one thing that, yeah, that I suggest with folks that are getting into this arrangement is set an end date, and that's a date that can be renegotiated when circumstances change. But what it does do is it sets an expectation that this is a temporary arrangement, mm-hmm, whether it's 3 months or a year. And it also allows a natural point to come back and revisit. Okay, you know, we're 1 month from when we said this was going to end. You know, where are you at on the job search? Wow. How are things going? It's a nice, natural check-in point as opposed to an uncomfortable, you know, dad has to come talk about kicking me out of the house conversation. So I think the end date is a really good one. I think Ray was right on with that with both of his kids.
Yeah, and just like student loans, you know, federal student loans where they're granted a grace period. I think in these type of arrangements, a grace period is fine for the student to come home, live rent free, get things up and running. But then, just like any grace period, it ends. And just as we were talking about with Ray, the fact that this arrangement worked for both of your sons and you got to know your daughter-in-law better, I mean, that's just, you know, that's a win-win for everybody.
Right.
Well, it worked out well for us, and actually I think my wife and daughter-in-law are really close because of it. They now have a grandchild. So, it, you know, it's just it was temporary. It was planned, as you say. And it benefited them in a way that, you know, we probably couldn't have any other way.
Mm-hmm. Nice contribution. Thanks for the call, Ray.
Sure.
Hey, guys, how often do you see this? And have you seen it on the increase in recent years?
Well, I think this recession has really spiked it. I think it's really been a dramatic increase. I'm thinking about a lady that I was working with a while back who took early retirement. And she was living off her retirement savings. Taking advantage of the 72T. I don't want to get into details, but she was taking distributions off of it early. And then she kept having to help her daughter who was having financial problems. And next thing you know, she's taking extra money out of her retirement, which is causing taxes mm-hmm. and penalties. Mm-hmm. And she did that repeatedly. And then next thing you know, she's taking extra money out to pay the taxes. Mm-hmm. And next thing you know, she's run out of money.
Yeah.
You know, so hard times create really dramatic situations, and you got to be mindful of, you know, I can't save the world. I can't save everybody. You know, you better save yourself first. You know, it's like on the airplane. They say put your own mask on first.
Yeah. Dan?
Yeah, well, it's quite common. Anecdotally, I know just talking to the relative who her son moved back home that, she, you know, talking to other parents that they, too, were also in the same arrangement. And you know, looking at the stats, I think there's 80 million some odd millennials and it sounds like a pretty good percentage of those that are recently graduating are going back home just because of the economic conditions. And I think it's a different generation. I mean, we can continue this, but basically I'm from Generation X. I think we were a little bit more rebellious and didn't want to go home. Whereas the millennials, I think, are a little bit – they're more accepting of hanging out with mom and dad. And you know,
really?
Really? That's a surprise to you, right?
Yeah, a little bit.
From the outside, I would say that's true, but we could talk about it more.
Yeah, we'll debate that. When a college graduate moves back home on Central Standard, I'm Bill Anderson. Our conversation will continue in a moment, and we'll also be talking about planning to make sure that your aging parents are well cared for and not at the expense of family relationships or our sound mental health. I'm Bill Anderson. Glad you're here. This is Central Standard on KCUR and KCUR.org. The sandwich generation, people in their 40s, 50s, and 60s, as a group, the sandwich generation is dealing with the realities of aging parents and good children who just have run into misfortune upon graduation from college. Children who did graduate from college but had to move home, it might be because they simply couldn't find they're underemployed or they're unemployed for whatever the reason. A lot of kids are moving back home with mom and dad, and we're here to kind of help make that a smooth transition and help keep families healthy and loving one another. You know, Lucas, I think you wanted to talk a little bit about changing social norms. So let's address that right now.
Absolutely right. Absolutely. Right before we went to break, we were talking about that this is becoming a more common situation, and I think it's driven primarily by the economic situation and in the economy. But I think the other piece, and one of our callers touched on it earlier, Vanessa, I believe her name was that she doesn't feel the societal pressure, the need to get out of the house, and it's not shameful to say I live with my parents. I think that stigma in society is changing, and I think that's driven by the fact that more and more people are doing it, and I think they're realizing that it can work out for the children especially, but also for the parents.
That's Lucas Butchell. He's with KHC Wealth Management. Also in the studio this morning, David Jackson with Waddell & Reed and Dan Matthews with Step & Rothwell. You know, if you'd like to be a part of this, give us a call, 235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. What kind of experience have you had as a card-carrying member of the sandwich generation? Happy, sad, funny, triumphant? We'd like to talk to you, 235-2888. Dan, let's move into, you know, the potential tax consequences of a child moving back home, because that is part of the plan here.
Yeah.
Or should be.
Well, it should. Yeah, it should be, because, you know, each individual is allotted an exemption, which is basically a write-off of about $3,800, $3,900 against your taxable income. So if you have a child returning home, they have an exemption over their head. So you can think of them, you know, put $3,800 above their head, and that's what they're worth. So, but, you know, who's going to take that exemption? Is the child going to claim the exemption, or can the parents? Mm-hmm. So from a household perspective, it probably makes the most sense for that exemption to be claimed on, you know, the parents' income tax return, because they're probably obviously in a higher income tax bracket. Now, understanding whether or not they're eligible to take the child as a dependent, thus get the exemption, there are certain rules around that. But, all these things kind of have to be discussed, especially around tax time, to determine what makes the most sense in terms of an exemption. Should the child file their own taxes and claim themselves, or should the parents claim them if they're eligible?
Mm-hmm. David?
Well, one of the big things that has come about also is when your kids come back home, health insurance. And now you can keep your child on your own health insurance until they're 26. You know, you used to not be able to do that. And
right.
That's a tremendous value to a lot of parents. I was talking to a parent just the other day who was really, really happy with that fact, because, you know, if the child had to go out and get some insurance on their own, you know, probably $400 or $500 a month with no income. It's like, how do you do that? And, you know, like, well, the child could just break a leg. Just, you know, something simple can happen where they get hurt. And, you know, those hospital costs can be astronomical.
Yeah. I mean, if you don't get that insurance, it's just a roll of the dice.
It really is.
Yeah.
You know, and you guys did a great show on healthcare costs just recently. I was listening to NPR, and they're talking about, you know, the fact that somebody who's uninsured pays a whole lot more for the cost of a procedure than somebody who has insurance.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not just the insurance I'm talking about. I'm just talking about the actual bill that the hospital gives you.
Right. Lucas, are there implications, tax implications for health insurance when in the scenario that David's just given us?
There are. I think the health insurance costs and also medical costs that you pay for your dependents are deductible on your tax return if you itemize your deductions. So, you know, I think the first step is figuring out if you can claim the child as a dependent, if that makes the most sense for you and your family. And if you can, there are probably some other tax benefits, like deducting health insurance costs and other health costs on your taxes that you could take advantage of. So, you know, there are those those situations where it really makes sense to look at it. Another thing that, from a financial perspective, that you should consider if you're getting into this arrangement is if you're the child returning home is going to be driving your vehicles on a regular basis, it makes sense to call your insurance company or your insurance agent and make sure that you've got the proper coverage listed, and also that the drivers are listed properly on your vehicles. That way, if they have a wreck in your car, that your insurance company is not going to question whether they should pay out the claim because of the structure and the age of the child.
Because that child was not listed on the policy? Is that what you're saying?
Exactly.
Okay.
And each insurance company, some take a very hard line, some are very much more liberal. But I think if your child is regularly driving your vehicle and they're not listed anywhere on the policy, I would have a concern if there was a claim.
And also, as being an insured person in your household, I mean, the bottom line is you want to be proactive about these kind of things and just be upfront with your insurance agent and tell them what's going on so that you know that you're properly covered against a peril. But also, going back to the income tax plan, you know, you don't have to, you know, be a son or daughter to be, you know, claimed as a dependent. You can be a qualifying relative. So if you have niece or nephew coming in and living with you because, you know, their mom and dad or whatever can't take them in, and you're providing their support, the parents are providing their support, you know, they may qualify to claim that person as a dependent too. So we're just not talking about parents and son or daughter. We could be talking about extended family too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Here's an interesting topic that Lucas kind of touched on is all the kids that are graduating today are saddled with student loans. I mean, in some cases, it's an ungodly number.
Yeah.
So you get out of school, your student loans have been on deferment all this time. Now you're not in school. The loans are coming due now. They're expecting you to pay.
Right.
You don't have a job. What do you do? And what kind of arrangement do you make with your parent to start making those payments? Because, you know, if you don't pay, you know, it's going to count against you.
Yeah.
But if you have no money, you know, so that's one of those really difficult conversations that is really worthwhile talking to your parents. Maybe they can help you paying the bill for a while with you making that understanding. I'm going to help you get caught up later, you know, once mm-hmm. I do get employed or, you know, whatever the agreement is. But it is something that needs to be addressed.
Now, it used to be easy to defer those college debts. Not so much anymore?
Not so much the way I understand it. And, you know, once you're out of school, it's like, okay, now the clock starts ticking.
Yeah. Lucas?
Generally, there's a grace period, as Dan mentioned, six-month grace period with federal loans. I think the student loans, federally, I think in a general statement, federal loans tend to be more flexible. You can get a forbearance for certain circumstances where you can continue to defer and not have to make payments on those loans. Private loans, so with a bank or some sort of financial institution, they can be all over the board, and they tend to be less flexible, I would say, in terms of granting the ability to not make payments or you know, some sort of a reduced payment, or maybe just pay the interest only. So I think the short answer would be, if you've got federal loans, there's definitely some flexibility. If you have private student loans, definitely call your lender and have a conversation to see if you can work something out. But I would expect that they would be less flexible than the federal ones.
Dan.
And quickly, as a parent, you probably want to protect your child's credit. Because think about it. If they can't get an apartment or qualify for a loan to get a house, they're stuck with you.
That's a really good point.
Before we move on, any other tax benefits or tax consequences that we should be addressing right now?
I think we've hit the main ones, haven't we?
Okay. Yeah. You know, I was listening to Marketplace last night, and they had an interview with a young man who attended Duke University, accumulated something like $38,000 in debt doing his undergraduate work, decided he wanted to go on to graduate school. He didn't move back in with mom and dad. He moved into a van. Whoa. And actually lived for, I think, a full year, if not longer, in this van in parking lots on the
wow.
campus of Duke. So,
well, at least Duke is warm.
Was that Chris Farley?
Wow. 235-2888 is the phone number, and the Cash Money crew is here this morning. We're talking about when a child has to move back home and live with mom and dad, and just the adjustments we make, both in terms of psychologically and in terms of keeping our family healthy. And we know, we understand, it's a family unit, and we want to help where we can, but at the same time, we need to draw kind of a line in the sand, or at least have set some expectations. Before we move forward, anything else on this particular subject? Because I'm going to close the book on this.
I will add one more thing, and that is money requests by your kids or relatives. You have to make it very clear whether or not you're giving them money or making a loan to them. And there are rules around gifts. You can only give $14,000 to one individual per year without invoking any gift tax implications. We're not going to get real down and dirty on that one. But be careful about that. And then if it's a loan, you know, create a promissory note. You can probably find a promissory note online where you can just fill in the blanks. But what are the terms? When are the payments going to be made? What's the interest? And there's also some income tax implications with that, because as a parent, you're supposed to claim the interest as income when you get those payments back. So there's also such things as a gift loan, where it's a blend of a loan and a gift. But, up front, if you give your son or daughter, say, $10,000, you know, make sure that you know you talk about whether or not you're going to expect to receive that back or look.
Yeah, it's just free a loan or gift, because that does create some really serious family dynamic issues.
Mm-hmm. It's Central Standard on KCUR. The Cash Money crew is here. Today it's David Jackson, Waddell and Reed, Dan Matthews, Stephen Rothwell, and Lucas Butchell. He's with KHC Wealth Management Services. Well, let's move forward. Let's talk about mom and dad and their needs. Needs we can almost expect to play out and to anticipate. It's incredibly emotional and difficult to watch a parent lose his or her skill sets and abilities to manage their day-to-day affairs and their money and so forth. So, you know, where do we start with helping mom and dad? And I'm going to guess that it's recognizing that there is sort of a problem occurring.
Well,
who wants to feel
well,
that?
Well, let's frame it first,
yeah.
Because, you know, the sandwich generation is in a really unique situation in that the kids are moving home, mm-hmm. you know, and they need help. And then your aging parents might need help at the same time. And that's an incredible amount of pressure on, you know, you and I at this baby boom generation.
Yeah.
You know,
we
may have our kids that are still in college and mom and dad that are almost ready to go into a nursing home. And, you know, so it puts a lot of financial and psychological pressure on the caregiver trying to handle or juggle both sides of that issue.
Oh, yeah. You know, I have to admit, I was pretty lucky. My mom and dad both engaged me in the process before they had problems, and it made things – I mean, it wasn't easy, but
right.
it made it a whole lot easier. For me, the challenge was, and I'd like you guys to respond to this, was like finally concluding that I, in some respects, am now in the parenting role.
Right, exactly.
And, boy, I did not want – Lucas, I didn't want to accept that responsibility at all because it was such – there was so much emotional baggage attached to that. It was heavy.
Emotional baggage and really flipping roles there. And,
yeah.
And especially with the generation that, you know, the folks that are in their 70s or 80s, that post-World War II generation is you know, folks that – that have tended to be very private and you know, mm-hmm. talking about money especially, but also just emotions and some of the fears that they have, that's generally not talked about.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to get those conversations started. And I think that you had a real blessing with your parents that they were willing to engage in that planning process in advance and talk about while they're still healthy, while they still have their independence. You know, when my health deteriorates a little bit, what would I like? What are my resources available to kind of meet my needs? Some kids have absolutely no idea what their parents' financial situation is, and it's a taboo subject.
Yeah.
If you can have those conversations and start those conversations before there's a health issue, before there's some sort of a crisis, that's goes a long ways to making sure you get into a good situation and have less of that heartache when it does happen.
But Dan, Lucas talked about there being a reluctance on that generation to talk. And a lot of us don't like to talk about our personal finances and assets and all that. So if your parent doesn't address it, how do we go about bringing that up and having that conversation?
Yeah, well, they're tagged the silent generation for a reason. And I think one of the ways that you can do that is by maybe engaging a financial planner, somebody, a mediator to come in and say, well, let's bring the whole family in together and talk about this. Because not only, you know, you have to bring all the siblings in for one thing, because as you know, siblings don't always agree. And so coming up to with a compromise on this and being proactive, Bill, I commend you for being proactive in your situation, because a lot of times people are reactive and then they get trapped and decisions aren't what they would like them to be. So, yeah, bringing in a financial planner, you know, maybe even
or
a social worker.
Or a state attorney.
A state attorney. There's a whole group of team members that can come in and just start the conversation, because a lot of times just starting the conversation is the hardest part.
Yeah. I remember our family went through this a few years back where my mother's health was deteriorating to the point where there are times she just would not answer her phone, would not respond, you know, because she just wasn't feeling good.
Mm-hmm.
And me and my sister had to go and have a conversation with her, said, you know, Mom, I know you want your independence. You want to stay in your own home. But we can't trust that you're going to be okay in your own home. And we finally had to move her in with my sister to take care of. That was a really difficult conversation to have, because she did not want to give up her independence, number one. And number two, she didn't want to feel like she was a burden on anybody.
Yeah.
But, you know, at a certain point, you know, we just had to recognize, Mom, you're just not in a position where you can take care of yourself.
Mm-hmm. So. You talked about working with your sister. I have to believe that engaging one's siblings in the process is important for a couple of different reasons. A, it's hard to do it alone, and right. B, you can build in some level of transparency because it's yeah. man, it's funny what money will do when
oh,
people
man.
When
I
people
could tell
smell
you some
it.
Stories. Yeah. I could tell you some stories.
Yeah.
You know, money starts disappearing when you know because one of the things that needs to happen if you're going to take care of an aging parent, maybe somebody uh-huh. needs to have a power of an attorney to say, okay, I'm going to pay their bills. I'm going to make sure the uh-huh. financial stuff gets taken care of.
Yeah.
But if that person who has that power of attorney is not the most responsible person in the world, they may start diverting funds and saying, yeah. hey, I'm going to take care of my own problems too. I've yeah. seen that happen. I've actually seen that happen.
Yeah. And Dan? A common mistake that you know people make is that they just want to be – they want equality, right, amongst all of the children. They want to treat them all equal. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately – if you name, you know, all of your children as equal power of attorney, you know, of attorneys.
Yeah, nothing will get done.
Agents. Then, well, yeah, there's that. And then there's also, you know, maybe the ability for one of the siblings to go rogue and do something, right. You know, that is not in the best interest of mom or dad. So, yeah, equality is not always the best solution in these cases.
So what am I leaving out here? With mom and dad, we need to make sure that everything's done legally. We need to be addressing their investments, right. their finances, their day-to-day bill paying, medical directives. What am I leaving out here? There has to be something.
Oh, there's a whole host of planning
yeah,
issues.
Could be a whole show, couldn't it?
It could definitely be a
well,
whole show.
Well, we will do this as yeah. an entire show coming up in
yeah,
June.
Yeah, I think that'd be good.
I think a good place to start for the family is just to get the facts. You know, and that's simply, you know, what do mom or dad or whoever you're is going to need the care? What do they own? Who, you know, what are their bills? You know, do they have estate planning documents? You know, get all the facts first, because a lot of times people just want to jump to conclusions in these cases just to try to solve the problem when they don't really truly understand what the problem is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, mom or dad may have it in their head, I am never going to a nursing home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're going to have to drag me. So that conversation needs to be, you know, while mom and dad is still in good shape to make that decision. What do we do with you, you know, when you can't take care of yourself? What are the options?
Yeah.
And how do we pay for it?
And, Lucas, the first goal, the first objective is to take care of mom and dad, make sure they live out their life in a dignified manner, right? But also, shouldn't we be thinking beyond that to what we could potentially inherit, not at the expense of mom and dad, but shouldn't that be also part of the planning process, like a plan B component to that?
Absolutely.
Or am I being selfish?
No, you're not. And I think it's a result of good planning to protect assets. And I would argue that the process starts with having a conversation with mom and dad and understanding what they want and understanding what they need. And sometimes those things don't always add up, and sometimes it's a progression. So that's where I would start the conversation, then getting the facts and understanding what they have the resources to do and what tools and directives you need in place to do that. I think the planning that you can do in this area is very detailed. There's Medicaid planning, which is really involved with protecting assets and making sure you preserve assets, but also have the ability to take advantage of some of the social welfare programs that are out there.
And let me step in there. That's where an estate attorney would come into play?
An estate attorney, or even a more specialized version, an elder care attorney. There are very nuanced laws there, and states have been increasingly more aggressive in kind of going after folks that are trying to give away or skirt assets to their children or other folks and then get on the Medicaid rolls. And so, you know, I think there's definitely some strategies you can use there. You just have to be very careful and get really good advice.
Yeah. Dan?
Yeah, there's a lot of pitfalls in that area. You know, Medicaid is basically when you have nothing left other than your bare, you know, your house and maybe a car. You have nothing left. And so as a result of that, you need help from the state. And in order to qualify that, there are a lot of rules and a lot of pitfalls to get there. But, I think the most important thing here is again, bringing everybody to the table and, you know, everybody coming to an agreement. And, again, finding out what the parents want in terms of their wants and needs. And then also just realizing that it doesn't have to fall on the siblings or the children. I mean, you know, it's probably better if they're not caring for for mom or dad, because, you know, the hits they take in terms of their satisfaction of life can be pretty huge if you bring an aging parent into the household, because of just the fact that, number one, they're not qualified to probably give the care, right, although, you know, they love their mom and dad and they do anything for them, but they may not be qualified to administer all the care. So, and just the financial hit, you know. What are you doing to yourself in terms of your financial independence?
Yeah, and, do you quit your job or do you go through your savings,
exactly,
to take care of them? Yeah.
What are you going to give up? And then also, do your siblings understand that you're giving up a lot? And so maybe you need to be, as you were talking about protecting inheritances, maybe you need to be reimbursed for that down the road. So there's a lot of dynamics going on here.
Well, we have time for one quick call, and it's coming from Vincent and Waldo.
Yes, this is Vincent. I was calling, what do you do about parents who are unwilling to cooperate with their children to make those financial decisions?
Okay. David, we're going to give you that.
I don't want that one because that is a tough one. That
anybody?
Is really tough.
Lucas? Dan?
Well, if they're unwilling, I mean, basically, maybe bring in a mediator at some point, because if you're not the one delivering the message, maybe they won't listen to you, but maybe they'll listen to somebody else.
Yeah, third party might be the way to do it.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we just scratched the surface on taking care. Yeah, but you were bailed out.
Yeah.
We just scratched the surface on helping mom and dad, but you guys, at one form of the Cash Money Crew, will be back next month to dig deeper into this. All right. Thank you, gentlemen.
Hey, great to be here.
Thank you, Bill.
Yeah, David Jackson with Waddell & Reed, Dan Matthews, Stephen Roth. Well, Lucas Butchell of KHC Wealth Management Services. You can subscribe to our podcast, hear this conversation again, or access any of our previous shows from the Central Standard page of KCUR.org. Tune in tomorrow. We explore the complicated, controversial world of genetically modified organisms. I'm Bill Anderson. This is Central Standard.